This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Oh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Migration Podcast, your guide for waterfowl hunting tactics, gear, and conservation. And now, your host, Brian Halbly.
What is up, everyone? As Johnny M. said, I'm your host, Brian Halbly. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to tune in to the Migration Waterfowl Podcast, presented by Bluebird Waterfowl. Check out their new spinning wing decoy prototype wings. They're offering a 6-wing prototype set to anyone interested in testing them out. I've got my set and I'm very impressed with them, to say the least. I've been sharing some photos and videos on my social media, and I'll be bringing you much more on those soon. Check them out at bluebirdwaterfowl.com or call them at 800-564-0914 and be one of the first people to get your hands on them. This episode is also brought to you by these other fine partners: the Duck Hole and Company, Rig'em Right Outdoors, Flight Day Ammunition, AV's Hunting Gear, and Northern Duck Calls. I'll tell you more about all of these partners later in the show. I do need to make a correction. Last episode, I announced our partnership with Northern Duck Calls, and I said they were out of Doylestown, Pennsylvania. That turned out to be their mailing address. That's what I jotted down from the shipping label. But they're actually based out of the Skippack area, or maybe it's Skippack, S-K-I-P-P-A-C-K, Pennsylvania. That's about 20 miles west of Doylestown. Sean over there at Northern Duck Calls actually said there wasn't any reason to make a correction, as it was so close, and he hunts all over that area anyway. But you know me, I'm a stickler for accuracy. And either way, it's a storied area with an amazing waterfowl heritage. So I just wanted to let you all know exactly where Sean was building those Northern Duck Calls. And while we're making corrections, author Michael Ruhlman contacted me about something he said by mistake during our conversation about charcuterie during episode 55. He mentioned duck ham that is smoked and includes pink salt in the recipe. He also talked about duck prosciutto and inadvertently said that it also included pink salt, which it does not. Only kosher salt and a duck breast for the duck prosciutto. You would have figured that out fairly quickly when you looked up a recipe for either one, but he did feel bad about the error, and he asked that the correct information be put out there. So there you go. Saw some really sad news in the waterfowl world this week. I'm sure most of you know that Phil Robertson from Duck Commander, later to be famous for Duck Dynasty. And man, just you kind of knew it was coming. It seemed like his health was kind of deteriorating the last couple of months. But, you know, it's never easy to see somebody like that, you know, pass away and have their family have to go through that. But knowing Phil and his faith and the emphasis that he put on, you know, knowing Jesus and growing closer to God every day, it's almost a celebration that he's with the Lord Jesus Christ right now. So really happy for him in that sense. My heart's sad for his family, especially, you know, the grandkids and the younger ones that don't really have a grasp of the afterlife like we do. But man, what a human being. He reached so many people, not just through, you know, his appreciation for the Word of God and his calling to witness to people, but as a duck hunter, as a call builder, and even later on through that Duck Dynasty show that became super popular, just, you know, an example of how to lead his family and, you know, saying grace at the table and just all those little things like that you know, rounded out his persona that reached so many people. I mean, we need more people like that in this world, and he's definitely going to be missed there for sure. I came to know him first through the Duck Commander videos. Man, he's been doing that a long time. I can remember those calls being available at all the sporting goods stores. I didn't get involved in waterfowl hunting until later in life, as most of you know, but I came along. I really started getting into it quite a few years before the Duck Dynasty craze hit on cable TV. But yeah, it was always fun watching him and his family on those videos, the duck men going out there and just having a good time and, you know, being very, not only very successful at hunting, but very successful in how they treated each other and how they had a good time, whether the duck hunting was great or not. So yeah, I could probably go on and on. Unfortunately, I never met the man in person, but, you know, they were involved in so much media over the years. You almost feel like you got to know them on a certain level, but, as a brother in Christ, like I said, I'm happy for him. And, you know, just wanted to talk a little bit about that and, you know, send my condolences to his family. So he'll definitely be missed. That's for sure. As you may have seen on my social media feeds, my Avies hunting gear has arrived. Man, I'm super excited about this stuff. The closest thing that I can compare it to, it actually, they use similar material to the Kuyu brand. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with that. I've never owned any Kuyu. I've handled some. I've thought about getting some. But the fit and the finish on their stuff, not to knock it, because a lot of people do really like it. And to be honest with you, I kind of looked at it when it first came out years ago. I'm sure they've come a long way since then. But I got to tell you, Avies really knocked it out of the park with the fit and finish and the quality. I got a little bit of everything from them. I've tried it out in a couple different scenarios. It actually got cooler here in Western Pennsylvania this week, down to the 40s some mornings and evenings too. So I've been able to try out the heavier pieces. Just like I said, super impressed. I fully expected it from what I've heard from people and from my dealings with the company leading up to the partnership, just getting to research, you know, the materials that they use and how they build their product. It was everything I expected and then some. I know it's easy, you know, for people to sit back and say, well, you know, they're sponsoring you or partnering with you, however you want to say it. And of course, you're going to say that their stuff's good. I wouldn't do that, honestly. I take my waterfowl gear very serious, like all of you do. Obviously, I haven't put it through its paces throughout the season yet, but you can tell right away if the stuff's going to be hardy or not. And it's definitely good stuff. And if you do any research on it, you know, don't take my word for it. But get out there, check it out. It's direct to consumer, so it's not everywhere. You're not going to easily be able to get your hands on it. But, you know, order a couple pieces and try it out. If you sign up on their website, they're giving 10% off when you first log in. And just give one of their pieces a shot. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. And they have a guarantee on it too. So if you don't like it, get a hold of the team over there and they will take care of you, get you refunded or get you something else if you're not happy with it. But yeah, super, super impressed with that. Can't say enough about it. And beyond excited to get it into the rotation this year with the rest of my gear. So the Refuge camo, it looks just like a mallard hen. Super versatile, blends in just about everywhere. It's kind of funny, some of the pictures that I shared. We went and took some photos of all the gear over at my neighbor's farm pond. And we were messing around, changing clothes, changing scenes, and kind of just taking a bunch of photos. And actually caught a fish just messing around. I had my trout rod still in my truck from going to trout camp a few weeks back. So I took that out, you know, as a prop to kind of get some pictures. And I just started throwing a trout lure. It's like a little metal minnow out into this farm pond. And this bass just crushed it. It couldn't have been any better. I couldn't have planned it if I tried. And like I told my daughter, I said, you know, if I had come over here to fish, I'd be sitting here for hours and wouldn't have caught anything. But anyway, we went through all of that, took photos by the edge of the pond, caught a fish, we're horsing around, and we walked over to this one tree. I said, this would be a cool spot to get some photos of, like, some kind of sort of like hunting action scenes underneath this tree with me looking up and shouldering the shotgun and stuff. And as soon as we walked over there, tight up against that tree, this hen mallard busted out of there. I mean, she had been hiding in there the whole time. Obviously, she has a nest in there. Otherwise, she wouldn't have tolerated us as long as she did. But that just goes to show you how that hen mallard camo that God made for them, it's just phenomenal. And Avies is taking advantage of that. I think it's pretty smart, and it's going to be very beneficial for me moving forward. So don't forget about the Patreon. If you're interested in joining us over on the Patreon site, patreon.com/migrationwaterfowl. I've got that set up. I have it set up now. You can pretty much view everything if you want to join for free and check it out. I'm trying to give you some examples of what I'm trying to build over there. We also have 3 different tiers if you want to support the show that way. I would greatly appreciate it. You can go ahead and do that. We're going to be, once we start building that community over there, we'll start doing a lot more interactions. You'll be able to have a lot more access to conversations with me and kind of see what's going on in my life, if that interests you. And we'll set up some meet and greets and maybe some activities we can get together and do some stuff throughout the year, and certainly a bunch of giveaways. So go over there and check that out. Like I said, if you want to support the show that way, that'd be I'd really appreciate that. And I think that's about all I have for you this week. I'm recording this intro on Memorial Day, so it was a high of 70 degrees today in Western PA. Perfect weather. I mean, I love like 70s in the springtime. Sunny, 70. Not too hot, not too cold. Just perfect. Got the deck's been set up since Mother's Day. Got to go out and enjoy that today. Grilled some steaks. And just thought about all the sacrifices that all of our brave men and women in the service of our military have done for the last 250 years. Just thinking from, you know, the American Revolution up through the War of 1812, World War One, World War II, Vietnam, the wars in the desert, in the Persian Gulf, in Afghanistan. It's just unbelievable how selfless people in our country have been for so long. And I think it's really important that we all stop and reflect on that. You know, we get to run around in swamps and lakes and rivers and wherever we want to go, and we can go and buy boats, and we can go and buy shotguns and hunting gear and move freely throughout the country, and just the amount of freedoms that we have all goes back to those people that sacrificed everything for what we have today. So take a moment, think about that. Thank God for that. And, you know, don't just do it on Memorial Day. Make that part of your routine as you're being thankful to God for all your blessings and your health and your freedoms. Think about those people. And, yeah, I just think that's super important for us to do. On this episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast, I'll be talking with Phil Christian from Ontario, Canada. We discuss Phil's journey into waterfowl hunting, his experiences with the Punisher Waterfowl Podcast crew, and insights into the duck hunting culture in Ontario. We also talk about hunting techniques, preferences, and setup strategies. Phil covers his hunting, travel, and adventures, including trips to Saskatchewan and Arkansas, and the challenges of waterfowl hunting outside of his local familiar areas. We discuss the realities of waterfowl hunting, including the challenges and rewards of hunting vacations, reflections on the previous season, and the essential skills needed for success. We talk about the importance of scouting, concealment, and understanding duck behavior across different regions. We also touch on Phil's personal hunting experiences, local goose populations, and his journey into using sub-gauges for hunting. That leads us into talking about shotgun gauges and some advantages of using a 20-gauge for waterfowl hunting. We discuss the importance of understanding ammunition specifications and the challenges of sourcing ammunition. We also touch on memorable hunting experiences, future plans for hunting, and the importance of conservation efforts that improve waterfowl populations. Thank you to God for blessing us with another opportunity to get together for another episode. So let's get into episode number 57. Welcome back to another episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. Appreciate you all taking time out of your day to join me. I got a special guest, Mr. Phil Christian. How are you doing today, Phil?
Good. I wouldn't go as far to say special, but adequate at best.
So do you prefer Phil or Philly, or is that just something that our buddy Damien calls you?
Damien is literally the only person that calls me Philly.
Yeah. I remember growing up playing hockey. A lot of the Canadian kids would always get some kind of extra syllable on the end of their name like that, like Philly or Stalzy, like a Jordan Stahl, be a Stalzy. I just kind of thought that was a Canadian type of thing.
Well, there'd be like their regular first name, but then there's kind of like you know, a shortened version, like William and Will, Bill, whatever, right? So they would shorten the first name, but then add other stuff to the end of it and make up a new one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, if you wouldn't mind taking a second, introduce yourself to the audience and let them know anything you want to tell them about yourself.
Well, my name's Phil. For those who don't know, I guess obviously your big fan base is U.S.-based. I'm from north of the border, live in Ontario. As most may know, or some, or very few, who knows. I'm part of the Punisher Waterfowl podcast with Damian Pittman and Craig Lalonde. Avid duck hunter, springtime, it's all turkey. And usually spend my summers fishing, mostly for muskie. I do try to devote a bit of late season time for trolling for the big girls. And yeah, that's about it. I've been staggering through the outdoors pretty much as long as I can walk for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you get mixed up with the Punisher guys?
Many moons ago, someone else, old friend of ours, he was running some like duck camps. So it's basically like a weekend guys away sort of thing. And just it was about building partnerships, building contacts, bit of duck hunting, and Damien was one of the attendees from that camp, along with two other his old friends, Mark and Ryan, who we were part of like the original start of the Punisher podcast. So that's how I met Damien, Mark, and Ryan. And then obviously we just kept in touch since. And then COVID hit. And of course, like, I don't know how things were for you guys down south, but like our country ceased, like just stopped.
Oh, yeah.
So then Damien was like, hey, like, I'm thinking about doing this podcast. So, like, that's how we got started with our show. And obviously, like, much like yourself, like, we did the whole video aspect, and that would get uploaded to the YouTube channel. But that was, like, our guys' weekly, like, beer and winks. Because, like, you couldn't go out, you couldn't go nowhere. You couldn't do nothing. So, yeah, we'd sit down and chat about ducks for an hour and have the odd bevy and... In some of the earlier episodes, I was in my garage crushing cigars and having a grand old time. But yeah, that's how I came to know Damien, and we've been super good buddies since. We've hunted a bunch of times together, done some trips together, and yeah, here we are.
That's cool.
Yeah,
yeah, good bunch of guys to be surrounded by. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, as Damien would say, surround yourself with good people.
Absolutely, for sure. So how did you get started in waterfowl hunting?
I started hunting when I was seven. Did a guy's trip away. It was my father and two guys that he was really close with, and then our sons. So myself and the other two guys, our sons, and the three of us boys were all about the same age. And that's, of course, that's going back to like 1987. And we did a trip to, it was basically, it's their deer camp. But we did this, you know, father-son trip for the six of us and just stumbled around the woods and shot some grouse and whatnot. So that's kind of my first introduction to actual hunting. And then I think I was about 15 or 16. I got invited to go back to that same camp. And I remember, like, we did, like, a swamp duck hunt one morning. Like, literally, I sat on a rock on the side of a lake, and we just wait for birds to fly by. And that's where I shot my very first mallard. And then I got into college, actually not too far from where I live now, like in the heart of the area that we call the Kawartha Lakes here in Ontario. And I wouldn't call it a duck hunting mecca, but it's a very decent spot local-wise. And when I was in college, I hooked up with a number of buddies because the program I was in was like a fish and wildlife program. So a lot of the people that go through our the program go on to be like conservation officers, or Mr. Green Jeans, as some are known. And started doing a bit more duck hunting when I was in college. Again, just like borrowing my landlady's canoe, and we'd go out and paddle out in the lake and set up in the cattails. No idea what the heck I'm doing. None. And I kind of like, hey, like I could get used to this. Like, and I was a lot bigger into fishing in my younger days. And it wasn't until I kind of got into college and started doing a bit more hunting. And it's pretty much just kind of rolled downhill from there. Just started spending some more money on some decoys. You know, now I had my own truck. So like, get out, start scouting. And a lot of the fields that I have permission on and still have permission on to this day was like pre-Duck Dynasty, where everyone and their cousin was growing a beard and calling themselves a duck hunter. So I got big into like the field hunting. And then I remember my dad, like I still have the boat to this day, bought me a little 12-foot tinner and a 66 Johnson 6-horse, which I still own. And that started into like my lake and water venturing with duck hunting and whatnot. And again, just kept growing and growing and growing. And just, there was always that need to like do more, hunt more, learn more. And like now, like, I was running in the dog competitions at a chocolate lab. I was running HRC tests with, got into the photography game, and then like that, some of that kind of led into like pro staff positions, and like now, you know, working with Damien and Craig, like, you know, we're running part of the sportsman show, The Refuge, which we were blessed to have you at for a couple of days. And it is just continuing to grow and grow still.
Yeah. It's cool to watch. And that, you guys did a great job on that part of the show. Yeah. People seem to really enjoy it.
Well, hopefully it's going to keep growing, and hopefully be bigger and better next year. And yeah,
that'll be great. Yeah. So you mentioned not being a duck mecca. Kind of walk us through what the duck hunting culture looks like in your area. Is it something that a lot of people participate in, or kind of scattered around?
Well, you get a lot of your opening day warriors, so to speak. Like opening day is always a mess, especially on certain bodies of water. Like our public land opportunities here, like especially like in my area, like the Kawarth Lakes, your public land opportunities are astronomical. Hmm. And just, we just don't have the same numbers of guys, obviously, like you do in the States. Like you get into some of these areas like Illinois, Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, where like, you know, you're tripping over one another just to try to find, you know, 6 square feet to stand on.
Sure.
We're reasonably fortunate in the sense that we don't have. Like again, obviously opening day's always stupid busy, and to my opinion it should be a religious holiday. And then like predominantly your week, like your Saturdays are the busiest days, but I find a lot of those numbers fizzle out. Like as soon as there's like a hint of cold or deer season hits, guys are done.
Right.
Like so obviously like where I am here, I'm in like this. So Ontario's broken down into 4 sections, and it's, you know, like there's your north section, and it moves down as you get closer to the bottom. And obviously, so this, the region that I'm in, southern Ontario, is like the big section for duck hunting. Like a lot of the guys up north, they get froze out real quick, and you just don't see the numbers, because at the end of the day, like you're hunting the migration, right? So you're only getting to shoot whatever birds are where you live and what's north of you coming down. So like obviously like say Arkansas, like we don't see the numbers like that, because again, you're hunting all the birds from Arkansas to the Arctic Circle, and sure, we don't see the same numbers. But yeah, like so our season here in Southern Ontario runs from the last Saturday in September till roughly the first weekend in January. Like we're fortunate in the sense that we're maxed out at like was the 105 or 107 days that we get.
Okay.
And there's times where you can get open water right to the last day. But then our main gun season for deer is the first 2 weeks of November. Three quarters of your duck hunters are gone.
Okay.
Like it just shuts down.
Yeah.
Now where I live, I'm in reasonably close proximity to Toronto. Like, I'm, say, 45 minutes northeast of Toronto. Getting fields is definitely getting harder and harder, that's for sure. You know, there's a lot of places, you know, just, we don't want hunting because there's city folk, or oh, there's already some guy hunting here, or there's a few guys hunting here, or we do have, there's a couple farmers that, like, don't let anyone walk on. So, you know, next, you know, okay, yeah, we scouted where there's like this field's loaded, 600-700 honkers. You show up the next day and there's like four parties.
Hmm.
So, but it's a bit of a battle, but unfortunately, like, the properties I got, like, exclusive permission, I've been hunting them, say, gotta be about 18, 19 years now. Like, we're mostly goose numbers where I hunt. We do see some ducks, but, like, you know, you're not smashing duck limits every day hunting dry right. fields. Geese, not a problem. You go shoot 4, 5, 6 man limits all day, twice on Sunday. Mm. Boy, we just don't see exactly the same duck numbers, unfortunately.
This episode is brought to you by Bluebird Waterfowl, creator of The Animator. The Animator is revolutionizing the waterfowl community with the world's first spinning wing decoy conversion kit. Turn your existing spinner into a water motion decoy in seconds and learn how to finish more birds with the sound of water. Guaranteed to boost your hunt or your money back. Flaring birds with your spinner is a thing of the past. Try one risk-free at bluebirdwaterfowl.com or at your favorite local outdoor supplier. Yeah, we're kind of the opposite in Pennsylvania. Guys will deer hunt through October and November, beginning of November, to catch the rut. And then that's when the weather starts getting a little bit colder traditionally.
Yeah.
And then they'll start duck hunting. And even myself, I didn't do much early season duck hunting early on in my waterfowl career. Yeah. So I was kind of the same way, chasing deer and getting on to the ducks once the weather was better. So
yeah. Okay.
I can appreciate that.
Right, so, like, our main rifle deer is the first 2 weeks of November, but our archery is like October 1st to December 31st for archery deer.
Okay.
Like, for the most part, it varies in some areas, but, like, pretty much for the most part, most areas is the 3 months long. But yeah, if guys are archery deer hunting, they ain't duck hunting.
Right.
Yeah, so it's like golf and fishing. You do one or the other, not both.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So what species are you targeting mostly there in your area?
Greenheads.
Okay.
You have to excuse me. I'm going to kill a spider. There. It's driving me nuts. Okay. Back to the show.
Any wood ducks? You get many wood ducks around?
Oh, yeah. Like, especially some of, like, my bread and butter, my most favorite thing to do is all small water duck hunting. So obviously we get to see piles of mallards, but certain areas, like, we can get into some good woody numbers because, like, that's the type of areas I like to hunt, like creeks, small ponds, swamps, just something about, like, that, just, you know, tight, you know, environment, so to speak, and, like, watching birds work at, like, 15 yards. Like, I laugh at guys that are like, oh, I got to shoot 3.5 inch 12 gauge, and here's me shooting 2 3/4 28s, shooting steel. Not even bismuth, steel.
Yeah.
Like 5/8 ounce steel number sixes. And, like,
get them close enough, it doesn't matter.
I've shot geese at 30 yards with that load.
Mm.
Pattern your gun, shoot them in the face.
Yeah, it's definitely something we're going to dive into, some of the sub gauges. I don't want to pick your brain about that, but
so much fun.
Before we get there, what's a typical season look like for you? How many days do you think you're getting out in the field?
Well, probably good for 20 to 30, I'd say.
Okay, that's a good bit.
I'm fortunate. So this is my own stupidity and own wrongful doing, but I also started, like, a firewood business on the side. So, like, come cold weather, I do a lot of cutting and whatnot, especially, like,
mm-hmm.
like for me, a lot of it's playing the weather. Like, if it's going to be like a warm, like, it, this is what I can't wrap my head around, like, because I've been down to the south, I've hunted Arkansas and Missouri, and these guys like scream for blue-bluebird skies. And I'm like, Christ, like, where are we? Like, the nastier the better is what we want.
Sure.
Like, I find, like, we get those bluebird skies, like, you'll get that morning rush hour of birds, but it's like 5 minutes before legal light.
Yeah.
And if they blow through, or like, you know, they'll come by, they'll give you luck, or they'll touch down, they'll piddle around for a few minutes, and then they jump and they're gone again. So, like, if the weather's going to be like nice, yeah, I'm going to Cutwood. But okay, if it's going to be like cloudy, snotty, windy, even if like we're getting snow, oh yeah, I got a gun in my hand, not a chainsaw. So it's like, I'd say 20 to 30 days on average. Like, I got a busy work schedule, got a wife, got kids. So kids are into sports and all this other jazz. And I try not to hunt too many weekends, because I work a lot of weekends, unfortunately, due to my work schedule. So I try to save those for family time. But there's the odd time I look at the weather and I'm like, sweetheart, I'm going. There's a front coming. I'm going. So
now, what kind of numbers are you averaging on a hunt, do you think?
Well, like personal harvest on a day?
Yeah.
Buddy, there's some days I see nothing, and there's other days we're bagging limits.
Okay.
Like even scouting. Like, I've even found scouting, like, that doesn't matter. There's certain areas I don't even bother scouting it, but
sure,
I just know the birds are coming, the birds are going to be there. But yeah, like, there's a lot of times I go solo. Like when my old boy was still kicking around, just me and the dog, we'd go out, might shoot two or three. Completely content with that. To me now, shooting limits means nothing.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's great, you know, for the photos and stuff, getting, you know, full straps and whatnot. But for me, shooting limits means nothing anymore. It's just a timeout, sitting there. Like, I could leave the gun at home. I couldn't care less.
I can appreciate that for sure.
As you get a little older, focus changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would honestly rather go out 3 days and get skunked than go out 1 day and bang a limit. Because in my opinion, that's 3 days I got to hunt as opposed to one.
That's a great way to look at it. Yeah, it's not uncommon to go, you know, maybe two or three hunts and PA with a skunk, but if it goes much longer than that, it does, I have to admit, it does get a little bit frustrating.
Oh,
but 100%. I'm the same as you. It's you know, two or three birds is a great day.
Yeah, like, there's times I'll take this, I got my dad's old single shot Kiwi 20 gauge, which is like the shotgun my dad grew up with. I've taken it out, I still have yet to shoot a duck with it. I'm hoping maybe we'll change that this year. I did shoot a big tom with it a number of years ago. But, you know, just something different. Take single shot. You know you're not going to miss because you only got one shot. So, yeah, it's just some days just feel like kicking it old school. Just change of pace. Take the single. Something different.
Yeah, that's great.
And you know it's going to be a day like where you're going to have like 10 or 12 flutter in and you're like, yeah, I got one shot, I blew this. Yeah, you're not getting those like singles and doubles where it's like, oh yeah, there's the drake and you can start cherry picking your birds, right? Yeah, this is a fact of life. You know what'll happen.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it.
Yep.
So you talked about keying in on small water. Are you getting back in there? Are you walking into these spots or kayak? Or
I am rocking canoe? The new canoe at the moment.
Okay. I
got the new canoe Frontier 12. I just actually picked it up off of Damien last year. So this past season was my first year of really hunting with it. And like, it is a game changer. Like, just for like the small water hunter. Because, like, you know, there's days where you, like, I'll hunt bigger water depending on wind direction. Like, I know certain areas with certain ramps, you know, it's a short paddle, 200 yards, 300 yards to where I need to get to my spot. And depending on the wind direction, it's like you got to chop like this if you're lucky. Yeah. But if there's days where it's like really kicked up, I got some beautiful little creeks I can get into, but like you can't walk it. You can't walk anywhere. Like you're in the boat and right. I'll go in that direction. But hunting out of the kayak is such a game changer, especially having the blind. Like it's a layout blind. It's a floating layout blind. Like mine's fully grassed out. It's got the doors and everything. Like it's, I don't know why I didn't buy one sooner. It's like, you don't need a boat yeah, lamp. You don't need right. a trailer. I got a truck. I rifle it in the back of the truck, throw a dozen, two dozen decoys into it, and away you go.
Yeah, it's that makes a huge difference when you can get out there in a small boat and have it concealed and just be that close to the water for sure.
Plus, like, again, all our public water opportunities here where I am, like, we have a lot of creeks and stuff that are completely and utterly huntable, but guys just don't think to go. And I'm like, there's birds in there. I know there's birds in there. Like that screams sure. wood ducks all day long. So yeah, just, I spent a lot of time on like Google Maps, and I have an iPhone, so I use the Apple Maps a lot. And then I'll toggle back and forth between like Google Maps and the Apple Maps, because like so a lot of times the satellite imagery is better quality on one as opposed to the other.
Sure.
And like I do a ton of, I guess you could call it internet scouting for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. It's scouting with the actual physical scouting part. Like it's finding spots. I've even gone as far as the fish finder I've got, bringing up the maps and like the lake telemetry. Like you can see depths and stuff. Okay, like how deep is this water? Can I stay in here? Like there's a lot of science goes into it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. This episode is also brought to you by the Duck Hole & Company, Attracting Feathers Together. They are a full-service habitat company located in North Carolina. If you have questions about waterfowl habitat or need some work done on your property, contact them through any of their social media platforms at the Duck Hole & Company. They can also fix you up with Golden Millet, also known as the Duck Buffet, and the best bang for your duck. So what are your setups look like? How many decoys are you taking on a, and you know, you're kind of limited on space. What's your average setup look
easily
like?
Easily run two dozen on the new canoe.
Okay.
Yeah. Like there's more than enough space for where I sit. I got my blind bag behind me. Like all my decoys are slotted. They're in slotted bags. So I can literally throw two bags across the bow and I'm laughing. So like, and depending if it's some place like a little tighter, I might just, you know, say run a dozen. And then like I can pick, yeah, you know, we'll go early season, go a little heavier on the hens, get your brown ducks. And then later on, maybe filter back some of the hens, go a little heavier on the green heads. And,
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like a lot of it's just, you know, if it's a hot spot I've hunted before and there's like a good, I know there's a good sized pocket, you know, for like if there's a buddy of mine that comes out as well, we'll run three dozen plus. Like there might be 40 or 50 yard hole in a creek where it just opens up and like we'll tuck into the bulrushes and we'll run a heavier spread because we get a lot of traffic through there. And they just, you know, obviously they go by, they see the numbers, they're like, oh, friends. Just bank and cup in, right? And just like it's not even fair because they just, sure. you know, you throw them a couple chuckles or something and they just see the spread and it's like safety in numbers, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, we'll stack a lot of the decoys out away from us because like if it's a bigger pocket, like you're not shooting the far side of it. Stack mm-hmm. those decoys a little heavier towards that end, force them right into your face.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have some spots that are fairly close or do you do some driving to get to some of them?
Buddy, I'm not going further than a half hour.
Okay.
Oh yeah. It's so fortunate where I am. Like there's a couple spots where yeah, I come upwards 45 minutes an hour, but like I ain't going any further than that. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little lazy. Not going to lie.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that if you got the.
I'm just lucky where I am.
Good area.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice. There's a lot of creeks, rivers, marshy areas where I can get the new canoe and away I go. And like it's short. Like I'm paddling a kilometer and a half. So like, what's that? Less than a mile? Maybe a mile? Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe a mile. Is like the furthest paddle. And gotcha. Even then, it's got to like one of my creek spots. So like. There's no waves. You're not battling with, like, you'll get a bit of wind, but, like, it's, you're not, like, dying with, like, acid buildup right. in your muscles from paddling. Yeah.
So you do much traveling outside of the area? Do you go on any hunting trips anywhere?
I've done a few. Like, did Saskatchewan. Oh. When did I do SAS? 2022, I think. I went out to Saskatchewan with some buddies, and we just freelanced. And all dry hunting, all dry fields. And then I did a trip to... We actually stayed in Missouri, but hunted in Arkansas. And that was with an outfitter. That was a good time. Like, the very... There was the three of us that went. There was three other guys from the States that went. And then there was the three guides... who also hunted, which I couldn't quite wrap my head around it, but whatever. Well, we smashed a 9-man limit of ducks the first morning. Like, that was obviously a sight to be seen.
I bet.
And then I hunted Habitat Flats a year and a half ago. Mm. Like, next level experience.
I bet.
And then I'm heading back to Saskatchewan this fall.
Okay. So,
like, I play my cards right every 2-ish years. You know, hey, sweetheart, something's come up. There's an opportunity. You know, I get photo work done. Like, yeah, she looks at me. She's like, you're absolutely full of BS. Yeah, I can't get nothing by her. But, yeah, I guess tonight, like, I did a lot of moose hunting years ago. Like, I was part of a moose group, and we hunted for, like, 10 years in a row. And the group is still in existence. The guys are still going. Like, it's my father. And a couple of his buddies, but just that kind of, I'm like, guys, you know what? Like, I love the trip. I love the group. Great group of guys. Couldn't ask for a better party, but it's like, I want to start doing some other things.
Sure.
And like the moose trip was like eating 2 weeks of my vacation. So it's like, I love the trip. It's just the drive. Like, we're way up Northern Ontario. It's like 16, 18 hour drive. And, just like, you know what? I just want to start doing some other things. So obviously it's give and take, right? Like since I'm no longer doing the moose trip, I've been fortunate to go down to south of the States and then hunt out west in Saskatchewan, going back again. So,
right.
But it's just, Saskatchewan's a grind. Like, we're up 4:30, 5 a.m., hunt all morning, come back, clean birds, nap, if you're lucky. And then we're back out late afternoon, scouting. Okay, we found something. And then you get back to the house, like, 7, 8 o'clock. Dinner, bed,
right.
Back at it again tomorrow morning. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, it's funny when you try to explain that to your wife. Like, she's like, "Well, you're on vacation and you're out there and enjoying yourself." It's like, I am,
but
I'm working harder here some days.
Yeah, sweetheart. Have you ever put out a 1600 decoy snow spread?
Right.
No.
Right.
And even with 7 guys, it's still a lot of work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just the hours, like you said, you're up earlier than you normally are. You're out later. You're having dinner at an odd time,
yeah.
You know, trying to get some fuel and go to bed with a full stomach, and you never sleep right.
No. And like, you nearly come back and need a vacation from your vacation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But like, it's fresh air 24/7 for like 8-9 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll take the wind out of your sails real quick.
For sure.
Yeah.
So compared to other waterfowl seasons, how did last year's season stack up for you?
I'd say it was—I wouldn't say marginal. Like, it was okay. Like, nothing to write home about. I'd had some great hunts. Picked up a new property that I've invested some time into, and doing a bit of manicuring of this pond, and installed a nice bench that we can sit on as opposed to standing in the water, and. Saw a lot more new water because, like, because obviously running the new canoe, but like I had some good hunts. I wouldn't say absolute bangers, but I'd say it was average-ish, maybe slightly above. I didn't do like hardly any field hunts last year. It was all small water ducks. That was the focus. I had this new little boat and this other new property hunt and just ran with it.
Yeah.
And I think I shot two honkers last year.
Okay.
We're like a normal season. I'm shooting 100, 150. Yeah, shot two.
Crazy.
Well, I just get one of the things. Just my focus was elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yep. Did a lot of small water, so.
Well, average is good. If you can say that your season was average compared to other seasons, that's great. I mean, we always want to have those banger seasons that exceed all of our expectations. But as long as it's not trending the other way, that's not a bad season.
Well, yeah, there's some of these days where it keeps you humble, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And like even no like doubt about said, it. I've put in time, I've scouted places, seen the birds, know the birds are there. I show up tomorrow and you see the birds, but they're not quite there. And that gets frustrating. But at least it's like, you know, it's like, okay, like I didn't suck. They just flew that way as opposed to this way today. And like I've experienced the same thing with turkeys. And let me tell you how frustrating that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think are maybe the top three most important things to be successful as a waterfowl hunter in your area?
Well, we can go one of those two ways. First version would be scouting.
Mm-hmm.
That's what like I drill in like a lot of new people I speak to and stuff. And like, you know, they're trying to get out and trying to learn things. I'm like, scout. Like you can hunt blind, which is fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You want to start putting numbers in the boat, putting numbers in the freezer, you got to scout. And then obviously the other side of the coin to that is scouting once, but then concealment and a decoy spread. Because there's been numerous times where I've killed birds without even touching a duck call. Because I know they're coming.
Yeah.
Because I scouted. And I literally throw out a handful of ducks, just, you know, throw, look, we're not the first ones to the water today. And yeah, but yeah, biggest thing is like just scouting, decoys, and concealment. And I cannot stress concealment enough. And you can kind of half and half the concealment and say movement. Like it doesn't matter how camoed you are. Like if birds are flying around and they're circling, 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 you see like people are bobbleheading stuff around like in the cattails and stuff. Right. They're like, not today. And away they go. Like, stay still, get covered up.
Like, so important. This episode is also brought to you by Rigam Wright Waterfowl, producers of the most well-designed and well-built products, tried and tested by the most heavily seasoned hunters on the planet. Their mission has always been and will always be to design, build, and supply the most innovative and high-performance hunting products available at a reasonable price. They will not succumb to outside pressure to cheapen their products and will continue to take bold steps and huge risks to separate themselves from their competition. They dominate in customer service, knowing that their end-use customers are the very backbone of their existence. Above all else, they operate with honesty and integrity and treat people fairly, never compromising these principles in pursuit of profit. Check them out at rigamright.com or your favorite local outdoor retailer.
There's a lot of times I've hunted in solids. I've smashed ducks wearing solids. No camo. Sure. Like there was one, like even the current waders I have are solid colored. That I hunted with those last season, the season before. So like we're in 2023, I had two pairs of Cabela's waders. I had a pair of the breathables and the Super Mags. both of them died. Yeah, both pairs died. And obviously they're both were camo. So I had to resort. I do a bit of river fishing, which I believe you're passionate about your trout as well.
Sure.
So I've got like my fly fishing / steelheading waders, pair of like light gray Sims with a sock foot. So I got like, you know, my lace up boots for them. And I've sat really under a willow tree on dry ground with my legs stretched out in front of me and have smashed ducks. Just didn't move. And obviously the biggest thing, this right here. This thing right here is definitely one of the most important tools of duck hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because if birds are working, dip your head. And obviously, like, you know, a lot of us duck commanders got beards and stuff. You know, hides a lot of the white and the shine off your face. But yeah, just dip your head. If need be, you can kind of, you know, you can crack your head up a little bit, try to peer under the center of the brim, whatever. But like, there's no need to be doing one of these.
Right.
That's how you flare birds. Like, it's just, absolutely, it's the smallest things. Like, people get so hung up on, like, you know, clothing, gear, and guns. Like, there's days I go in solids and I'll wear a Filson jacket. It's brown.
Sure.
Light brown. Not even dark. Like, it's almost like this color.
Right, right.
Just sit there, don't move, don't stare at the birds.
That's it.
Yeah, like, what do you think guys did 60 years ago?
Right.
Like,
right.
The old canvas coat or, like, the black and green plaid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was, like, some of the frog camo, like, the old military surplus stuff kicking around, but, like...
Sure.
You know, a lot of guys couldn't afford it. So they're hunting with, like, whatever jacket they had. And they still kill birds.
Yes, they did. Yeah. No doubt about it.
Shooting 2 3/4 inch. Well, shooting lead. Good old days. But, yeah, like shooting 2 3/4 inch shells.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, yeah, I howl when guys like, oh, you got to shoot 3 1/2 inch, 12. No, no, you don't. You need to be a better duck hunter is what you need to be.
That's for sure.
It drives me nuts. And this obviously translates right into turkey hunting as well. Like, I get an absolute kick where guys, like, you know, beat their chest. Yeah, I shoot them at 70. Well, that's because you suck.
Right.
That's why you shoot them at 70 is because you suck. Like, I pride myself at shooting them at 15 because I've done my homework, properly covered up, and I've done the work to fool that bird to coming in that close. And same with turkeys. Like, I shoot them at 15, 20 yards all day long.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like to see them up close. And being an archery hunter for deer and other big game, I mean, yeah, you can shoot them at 3, 5, 6, 7. There's guys even shooting big game at over 1,000 yards now, which, hey, more power to you. But I want to be up close and personal. You know, I want to have the ducks close. I want to see the details of them. I want to have the deer up close. I think it's just more of a challenge that way.
Yeah, like this one pond that I've got, which I can definitely test this pond to, like, starting my love of 20 gauges and small water ducks. Pond's 20 yards by 40 yards. That's it. Sunken down a little depression, like, kind of adjacent to, like I can't even call it a creek. It's about 2 feet wide. In this farm property, and there's just like there's a little smattering of trees around it, but like the pond runs lengthwise north and south, and there's some tree cover in like the northeast corner and down around the whole kind of like south end. So the entire like west half of the pond is open, and there's a bit of a gap kind of in the center on the east side. And this is where I was hunting this pond with the Sims waders, with my steelheading waders. I sit on the ground under a willow tree, and those birds don't see you until they're about 5 feet off the water. And at that point, they're about 10, 15 yards in front of you. Yeah. Like I'm lucky I can look up through the willows and, like, you know, they don't see unless the birds are coming straight at me. So I sit like the very northeast corner. So when I morning hunt, sun's coming up over my back, and I got actually a bit of a berm behind me, which is nice. But I sit under this willow tree And unless the birds are coming off the field straight at me, it's too late.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I remember I took my dad there. Well, it was going back a few years ago. We smashed a two-man limit in like an hour. That's like, great. I had never seen anything like it at this. That's the best day ever I've shot out of that pond. And I got a band, my first ever duck band, like 2 days later. Not in the same pond.
Yeah. So, really cool.
But yeah, so just sitting there shooting them at 15 yards, feet down, cupped up. Like, how can you beat
that? That's where it's at. That's right. So you've made it down, was it Missouri, you said?
Yeah, down in the Panhandle, or Boo Hill, whatever.
Did you notice any major differences in duck behavior there compared to where the migration's starting up towards you, or even Saskatchewan where you've hunted?
Well, like, a lot of it, we were hunting, when were we there? It was like early January when we hunted down the Boot Hill. So like, duck numbers are like thick, and we were hunting a river, but I guess like it's, I don't know how it's like, it's all foreign to me. I don't know how this works. I don't know if sections of the river are private or what, but like we were in like one of these like gigantic duck blinds. Like you could hunt like 12 guys out of it. There was a stove and like couches.
Oh yeah.
Like it was something else, but
laid out.
So obviously we're inside. It's like, couldn't really make any real observations of bird behavior. Cause like you're sitting down, you're all covered up and you're, they got like sure. kind of Spanish moss, whatever, in the holes. So guys aren't probably facing birds, but then they have like what's called the crow's nest. So they have like a little set of stairs that go up and a guy sits on top and he can obviously work and watch birds, but like, everything that we were shooting, we're just like eating it up. So it gets, it's hard to say in that sense, like to compare it to things up here. Because like down there, like we're seeing thousands and thousands of like, so down there, you'd see more birds in a day than you would all season up here.
That's interesting. Yeah,
like when I hunted Habitat Flats, you'd see 25,000 mallards in a morning, maybe 40. Mm. You wouldn't even see that in a season up here.
That's wild.
But yeah, again, a lot of it's just topography, and especially down like where Tony is, it's a big funnel, big highway.
Sure.
Everything piles through that gate.
Completely different than the Atlantic Flyway, for sure.
We can't even compare it. It's not even remotely the same. But there's been days where I've been out hunting and I've like literally watched the migration. Because, like, you're scouting, and, like, after a while, you get to know your birds. You know where they're coming from. You know the numbers in your area. And, like, I remember one morning was field hunting in particular. And we were, like, it was a winter wheat field. And I want to say we were looking, like, 400, 500, 600 geese. Good, respectable shoot for, like, 3-4 guys. I can't remember, like, there was 3 or 4 of us. And, like, through the course of the morning, like, as the sun came up, and you think the temperature would go up? No. Temperature was going down that morning. And we could like literally watch nonstop high flyers coming from the north, burning past us all morning. Yeah. And it's like, yep, they caught that wind. We're out. Time to go find something warmer. Head to Mexico.
Yeah.
But again, you look at some of the areas down south there, like guys are running all these pumps and wells and this and that, like there's open water and piles of food. So like, they just stack up.
Yeah.
Like, why are we going to keep flying? Like we're lucky with a lot of the geese like that around here where I am in Ontario, because we have Lake Ontario. Lake Ontario never freezes. It's never frozen a day in its life, as far as I know.
Minus it's like, pretty deep too.
It's a hunt. 100 plus, I don't know if it hits, there might be some sections I think might be 350, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it never freezes. And where I am, we've got 2 nuclear power plants that are right on the shores of Lake Ontario, because they use the lake to cool the reactors. So just like a radiator, right? Pump the water in, helps cool the reactors, pump the warm water back out. Well, come wintertime when it's like minus 10, minus 15 for us. I don't know what that's for you guys. Maybe just above zero or so. You have these two areas where the water's like, I wouldn't say a hot tub, but it's lukewarm to them.
Right.
And they're only flying handful of miles to the north. Like, you know, all these storm ponds, all your main lakes, like the old Kawartha lakes, they're all frozen up. These birds are getting up. They're only flying 5-10 minutes north. And it's just fields upon fields upon fields. So, like, goose numbers, like, there's certain areas that I hunt and be nothing to see, say, 2,000-3,000 geese in the morning. We had ducks, handful.
Yeah.
But, like, your goose, the goose numbers are just a steady gong show. There's just so many of them.
It's crazy. Yeah.
You should come up for a hunt.
This episode is also brought to you by Flight Day Ammunition. Flight Day Ammo was born in the heart of the Mississippi Flyway in west central Missouri. Founder Ben Myers and his family have duck hunted this region of the country for over 50 years. Ben's passion for quality ammunition led to the development of his own brand. Flight Day utilizes the best components in the ammo industry, which provides unmatched quality, patterns, and lethality. Check them out at flightdayammo.com and be sure to use discount code MW10 at checkout to save 10%.
Our regular season is 5 birds a day. And then we've got an early season at the beginning of September. And this is to help combat all like the resident birds that never migrate. So like your golf course birds. Right. Or like literally these birds, they do two things, feed and fornicate. That's it.
Sure.
All they do. They don't migrate. They feed and make more. So there's like a week and a half early September. And then we've got another week, which is like end of February into March. And you're allowed 10 birds a day.
Wow.
And there's no freezer limit.
Hmm.
Like you could shoot 10 every day for like the week and a half in the early season. So what's that put you at? That's 100 birds to yourself. You hunt the late season, you shoot yourself another 70. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is a blast. When you get onto it, let me tell you, I've been a part of a few 50 bird shoots. And it is a riot.
I bet.
Yep.
So let's dive into these sub gauges. I know you're pretty passionate about them.
Just a wee bit.
Tell us how you started getting into that.
Obviously, like, first gun I was ever given to me by my father was an old Cooey single shot 20 gauge, which the only thing, unfortunately, the only thing I've ever killed with it was a Tom. Like, I was given that when I was like 11, 12. And I got my license when I turned 15. And I think it was that Christmas, my dad bought me an 870 Express in 20 to start out with. And like, I'd shot some 12s here and there, like, but he's like, you know what? Here, start with this. My dad doesn't want to be an ass. He's like, here, we'll work you into this. And he gave me the 20. I shot it for a few seasons, and I'm like, oh, yeah, got to upgrade. Need more horsepower. So I went to the 12, got myself a 12-gauge Express, and then shot that for a number of seasons. And then I can't remember. Like, I had a Remington 1100 20-gauge Skeet. Mm-hmm. That I used to shoot skeet with quite a bit with a friend of mine. We were members of this club, and I would shoot like every week. And we'd go and like burn a flat every time we'd go shoot. Like we're 250 rounds, and really enjoyed shooting that. And I'm like, I'm horrible with guns. Like I've owned more guns than some people have ever seen. Like it's bad. So like I was like going through 12 gauges, testing stuff here, testing stuff there. And I ended up with an 1187 20 gauge. When did I buy that gun? If I can figure out the math. I bought that gun in May of 2012, I think. 2011 or 2012. Okay. Was when I bought that gun. Yeah, it was May of 2012. I bought this 1187 20 gauge and started dabbling with it, shooting this particular pond, like the 20 by 40 pond. I'm like, I wonder if I can, just to be different, try something different. I'm like, I've always thought, like, yeah, you got to shoot 12 gauge. And I'm like, I wonder if I can shoot a duck with a 20 gauge. So I solely shot this duck or this pond with this gun, and that was it. And I'm like, yeah, like, this works. So then I started kind of branching off and got through some other 20 gauges and did some upgrades here and there. And then, like, you know what? I wonder if I can shoot geese with a 20 gauge. So I'd be on, like, field shoots, take it out. And I'm like, and my biggest thing, and I can't stress this enough, is pattern your gun. Yeah. Pattern your damn gun.
For sure. What shells were you using early on?
All Kents. Shooting the old original Kent Fast Steels. When they had like the old.
What shot size?
Twos. I was running twos for the most part, especially because shooting honkers. I was like, hey, I wonder if I can shoot geese with a 20 gauge. So, like, yeah, I'd do field shoots with a 20 gauge. Start lacing honkers at like 35, 40 yards. Haven't turned back. Like, I've gone through a pile of different Benelli 20 gauges now. Had a 28 gauge at one point, got rid of it to buy the new canoe. Now I need to get myself another 28 gauge because that's a lot of fun to shoot, let me tell you. It's funny because I look at a lot of people like rag on ammo manufacturers and like how much this brand shoots like garbage. This brand shoots like garbage. I had my 20 gauge M2 and I bought an Ethos Cordoba 20 gauge as well. I've had the M2 for ages now. But I bought the Cordoba, would have been a year and a half ago, like right before I went to Habitat Flats. And I took the two guns out, and I want to say I had at least five or six different chokes. Like, I burned through over a box of ammo. Because, like, I had Kent Fast Steel 2.0 twos. I had some of their new stack loads, the plus loads in, like, 4x6. I had Kent Bismuth number 4s. And what else did I shoot? It was the 2s. Oh, I had 2x4s, 4x6s, and then the Bismuth 4s. And I was swapped. And one thing I think I can attest to the whole powdering thing was that the M2 is a 26-inch barrel. Cordoba was 28. And I was swapping out I would run like the 5-6 chokes through the one gun with all the ammo. And like I was seeing patterns and I was like, I couldn't even post the photos on the internet. Like it was that bad. But then I take that same choke and I put it in the other gun, same ammo. And it's like, boy, I'd be shooting swans with it. Like the pattern's just that tight.
Yeah.
Pattern your gun. Like just astronomical differences. The biggest thing I've settled on now, I got a Rob Roberts T2, which I had actually bought years ago for my M2, but that thing's welded into the gun. That and the Kent 4x6 loads, it's just not even fair.
Yeah.
But just you find what works.
Sure.
And like people again, you got to shoot 10 gauge, 6-inch shell. No, you don't. Pattern the gun. Work your birds. Shoot them at 10.
Yeah, no doubt about it, for sure.
But again, like the big thing shooting the sub gauges, there's no recoil. Well, there is. It's minimal. You ain't going to notice it. So you have faster follow-up shots. The ammo is even the Fast Steel 2.0s I was running, they're running to 1,550 feet per second. Those pellets are whipping. And it doesn't matter if you're shooting twos, threes, fours, whatever you're running, whatever works best for you. Those pellets are ripping. The only difference between that and the 12 gauge, there's less of them. And some guys just can't, like, obviously, you know, your payload availability is a lot different with 20 gauges. There's less options. Where, like, with 12 gauge loads, you can get like your ounce and a quarter, ounce and an eighth, ounce and 3/8, like a lot more options, right? 2 3/4, 3, 3.5 inch. So you have you know, varying payloads and speeds and whatnot. But like at the end of the day, it's just pellet count. And people cannot wrap their head around it. Yeah. Like no one reads. They don't read the box. They don't go on the website. They don't do They don't do 3 minutes of homework. Mm-hmm. It's pellet count. Like tell me why that 12 gauge at, you know, whatever the load is, whatever the shot side is, tell me those pellets that are ripping out at 1550 feet per second are doing any different than the pellets coming out of my 20 gauge at 1550 feet per second. Still same speed, still same pellet. Can't wrap their head around
But now, how difficult is it for you guys to get ammo shipped in from the U.S.? You have to buy most of your stuff local?
I'm fortunate where I'm actually one of the photographers for Kent here in Canada, so I get all my stuff I get all my stuff direct from Kent. But Kent, and thank God they've started doing this, because they just started doing this like, well, I want to say it was like 2 years ago. Kent now sells direct, so you can literally go to Kent's website and order ammo through Kent straight off their website, get shipped right to your porch. Now obviously there was some struggles a few years ago, especially with us 20 gauge guys, like the whole COVID thing, shutting plants down, production was behind, like all this other nonsense. But like, it was a bit of a struggle to get 20 gauge. I'm not going to say how much I got, but I'm good for a season or two. Yeah. But, 20 gauge was definitely scarce for a lot of people. Like don't get me wrong. I still got a 12. Actually have three. Still got a few 12s tucked away. Like my main field gun, if I'm ever shooting the 12 gauge, the Super Black Eagle too. But like obviously the main focus was 12 gauge. Yeah. So that's like all you could get, all you could find, because that's what the vast majority of the population shoots.
Sure.
And I'm just one of those people who likes to be different.
I'm excited to announce that AV's Hunting is now the official hunting clothing and camo of Migration Waterfowl. The unmatched quality of their high-performance fabrics and direct-to-consumer sales model delivers high-end gear at wholesale pricing. Their unique camouflage pattern was built from the sky down, mimicking the natural camouflage of a hen mallard. Check out their innovative line of technical waterfowl clothing and their revolutionary refuge camo at avshunting.com. That's avshunting.com. Advanced waterfowl gear designed for every condition. Yeah, I'm going to be having Ben Myers on the show. He's the founder of Flight Day Ammunition. He's super interesting to listen to. I can't wait to do the podcast with him, because he's going to dive into a lot of the stuff you talked about people not paying attention to. So hopefully it'll get some people thinking and at least looking into things, like you said.
I'll be the first to admit, like, a 20 is not for everyone. It's not. But I can tell you, I've lost track of how many guys that shoot 20s because of me now. Like, you got to try this. This is like the best thing since sliced bread. And some people are like, it's not for me, which is fine.
Sure.
I will not knock it, but like, don't knock it until you tried it. And I got so many buddies that are like, all right, I've gone out because like I've owned 2 or 3 20s, go hunt with buddies. I'm like, here, try this. Here's a box. And they're like, you want to sell it? No. I can show you where you can get one. But yeah, just so again, so the lower recoil, lighter gun, faster follow-up shots, And like, I can honestly say my accuracy and like kill percentage increased astronomically when I went to a 20 over a 12.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I tentatively run a slightly tighter choke because knowing you have that less pellet count, I like the pattern with a slightly tighter choke. I do all my stuff at 35 yards. Ducks, turkey, yeah. Doesn't matter. I pattern 35 yards. And like you hit a bird, it's going to die. Or you've straight up missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But I even enjoy that part of the process. Yeah. Again, it's time outside. I'm poking holes in paper. It's still just
as yeah, it fun is. To me. It's enjoyable for sure.
Yeah.
So you do quite a bit of volunteer work for some waterfowl organizations. Talk a little bit about that and how you got started in that.
Well, we actually just had our first dinner this past Friday. Where I live, a couple of buddies that I've just met through Facebook, dog stuff. I sold one guy's stuff and, well, you live around the corner from my house. Like, hey, we should hunt and whatnot. And we just kind of got connected from there. But these guys were part of a Delta chapter, I'd say an hour east of where I am. And then this past fall, so my two buddies, Jordan and Derek, like they're neighbors. They were part of this chapter. They're like, why do we keep driving like an hour? Like to go all the way out there. We should just start one here. So they left that club and started our own chapter, the North Durham Delta Waterfowl chapter past fall. And we just actually had our first inaugural banquet dinner this past Friday, which was on my birthday of all days. Thanks to everyone that sang at the banquet. Yeah, there was like 100 people singing me happy birthday. I wasn't embarrassed whatsoever.
That's funny.
But so we just started that. So obviously we're very much still in the infancy. But I think we got some big plans to hopefully get some donations going this fall and maybe get some wood duck boxes going. My youngest child, he's actually part of one of our local Boy Scouts clubs. So yeah. I know like they do a lot of like woodworking stuff and this and that. So I'm hoping I can get some wood donations and then talk to the scout leaders and maybe get the kids to fabricate some duck boxes for us. And maybe I would have liked to have done it this past fall or past winter, I should say. But then obviously we were big into planning this first dinner. So that kind of took the focus, but I'm hoping this fall we can actually get some nest tubes going. I've got some great spots, even spots I don't hunt. It's just like wood ducks live there. Let's make more of them. And just, I'm lucky. Like there's a lot of places I can talk to farmers and stuff. I'm like, hey, this is who we are. We're just trying to create more ducks. Can I stake this thing to a tree? And we will babysit it. Farmers like, okay, the best people on earth.
That's great.
Yeah. Like even my father-in-law, he's got some flooded property up behind us. Not huntable, unfortunately. They have horses. But he's like, oh, you want to put up what? Because he's huge into photography. Like, he likes sitting on his pond and just taking pictures of stuff. He'd be all over it. Like, stake 100. I'll buy the lumber. I'll make the boxes. He don't care. Yeah. Like, he's all game for it. But, we got big plans for the club this fall. This is actually the first kind of organization I've been a part of. I've been to some, like, Delta dinners, DU dinners and stuff in the past. And, it's nice finally being involved in something personally. Like I'm actually the treasurer of our chapter. Okay. So we're still new to this. We're still working out some of the kinks and whatnot, but hopefully in the coming season and years to come, we'll get some duck numbers rolling, get some tubes going, some boxes, and we'll see what happens.
Well, that's the biggest challenge is getting it off the ground. Yeah. At least you're heading the right direction now.
Yeah, but we've fortunately, like we have an amazing club, amazing members. It's been effortless.
Excellent. Yeah. So what's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you while waterfowl hunting?
Oh, I could say falling in like the middle of December. That always sucks.
Yeah, especially in Ontario.
Yep. That was in Lake Ontario. Can honestly say I'm fortunate. I haven't been in one of those situations where like there's been big rain outs and I've taken a honker in the melon. But I'd definitely say one of the biggest things was shooting a minor band.
Okay.
And like for those who know, they know.
Yeah, for sure.
I forgot that day. We shot three bands, two regular leggies. One was like a local bird, actually. I could literally, where the field we hunted, I could stand on the roof of my truck and look out in the horizon and literally look where that bird was banded. Yeah, I shot that one. I shot the miner. And then my buddy, he actually shot like a James Bay Canada goose.
That's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, getting the miner was definitely the craziest thing, I can honestly say. Yep.
Very nice. So what's next for Phil? What do you got on the calendar for this year?
Well, like I mentioned, back to Saskatchewan. I'm going out for, I think, 10, 11 days. Get a lot of photo content done. The biggest thing I want to do this fall is definitely explore more small water. I had like a laundry list of places I wanted to hunt this past fall, and unfortunately, good problem to have. I got into a few spots where like I had to beat the ducks away. So I'm like, let's keep coming back here. But yeah, my biggest thing is I want to explore a lot more spots this fall with the canoe and just see what I find.
It's a good plan.
Yeah. But other than that,
I got some.
That's pretty much it. Like hope we get another 28 gauge, and I bought an ice eater. I got one of the show me ducks from the Toronto Sportsman Show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that works out and extending my season.
You're gonna get some hate mail from the Southern Hunters.
Oh, them heated corn ponds.
We're stopping the migration.
Yeah, about three birds at a time. Yeah, they're migrating right in my chest freezer, which is right beside me here.
There you go.
Yeah, trust me, I am not making a difference.
Yep. I can understand that.
So, what about yourself? Anything big going on this fall, or any trips, new gear?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I hope to get, I think something new is going to be Idaho.
Ooh.
I got an invite there, so going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, nice.
Hopefully back to Kansas and Nebraska for early teal. That was a lot of fun last year.
Yeah, that's one thing we don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they leave pretty early here, too, so it's kind of nice to catch them over there.
Mm-hmm. We get some up here, but we just don't have a designated teal season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how we are, too. If they're still around in October when we open, which is very rare. Yeah. But Ohio has a early teal season, which is crazy, right next door.
I guess a lot of the guys would do that out of Sandusky.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be the most popular place for that.
Yeah, that's actually where my old dog was from.
Okay.
Was near there. So like Oak Harbor.
Gotcha.
No one's ever heard of Oak Harbor. But they know Sandusky.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, other than that, who knows? Who knows where I might end up? I'm in the drawing for an Iowa deer tag. I've got 5 points. So I should draw this year.
Nice.
That's going to take up some of my time, but other than that, it'll be more waterfowl hunting.
I guess that would just be whitetails out there, right?
Yeah.
That's
like the best place in the United States for, arguably, for whitetails.
No, it's Michigan. I've driven through Michigan many a times. There is more roadkill on Michigan than I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, they got tons of deer.
Yeah, they're like squirrels. About it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want to shoot deer? Go to Absolutely. Michigan.
Yeah, plenty of them.
Yeah, there's actually, I wouldn't say I'm like deathly afraid, but I've been to the States a number of times, like to go buy stuff. Like I bought a boat in Minnesota. My second dog came from Iowa, and driving through Michigan in at night is one of the most terrifying things of life.
I bet.
Yeah, like my buddy and I actually, it's funny, for both those trips, it was the same friend that came with me, my buddy Chris. We actually saw a deer get schmucked in front of us by another car.
Yeah.
And I almost clipped one point with the side view mirror. Dope. Coming out of the ditch right beside us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Deathly afraid to drive through Michigan at night.
Yeah, we've got plenty of deer in Pennsylvania like that, too. It can get pretty bad in some areas, but just we don't have the age and the structure and the soil and the stuff that they do in Iowa to get them to that giant level.
Yeah, it's like so, same thing here in Ontario.
It'll be fun.
If you want a trophy like 300-pound plus buck, there's two places in Ontario to go shoot them, Prince Edward County and Kenora.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something about the blood in those two areas. That's it.
Right.
Like,
right.
Obviously, there's, you know, the anomaly here and there, but, like, consistent, big-bodied whitetails, those are the two places.
Hmm.
And it's just the genetics, the blood, who knows? Different strain of deer.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, I got some rapid-fire questions for you to wrap up, if you're ready.
Send it.
What's your favorite waterfowl?
Mallards, greenheads.
Always a good answer.
Not the brown ones. Just greenheads.
What's your favorite waterfowl recipe?
I jerky everything.
Nice.
Yeah, that's all I do. I jerky it all.
Good deal. Yeah. What's your favorite shotgun?
Benelli M2 20 gauge. I got one. I'll take it to the grave.
There you go.
Yeah.
What's your favorite snack in the blind?
Pop-Tarts.
What flavor?
Strawberry. Gotta be frosted. Nice.
Classic. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gold standard, buddy. That and coffee. Copious amounts of coffee.
Oh, yeah. Gotta have it. Do you prefer hunting lakes, marshes, or rivers and creeks?
Rivers and creeks.
Nice. How many decoys do you use on an average hunt?
Best answer I can come up with is like 12 to 15. Because I do a lot of hunts where it's like a little bit more, a little bit less. So yeah, I'm gonna give you 12 to 15. Give you a range a little bit.
I think we got the answer to this one earlier. Do you prefer to go by boat, kayak, or walking in?
Honestly, it's a bit of a half and half between walking and kayaking.
Okay.
That's like literally half my hunting is on foot, on a couple ponds and places I got, and the rest of it's all yakking.
Awesome. Yep. And what's your favorite place to waterfowl hunt? Could be somewhere you've been once, could be home.
I'd say the old pond where I started like learning how to shoot the 20 gauge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good deal. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time tonight. I took up a little bit over an hour of your time. Is there anything else we wanted to talk about that I forgot about?
No, and if we do come up with something, we'll just have another episode.
Oh, definitely have you back on
anytime. I got a lot of years to kill, Brian. I got all the time in the world. So I hope.
And where can people find you if they want to follow along?
Instagram's probably the best bet. Fowl Collective. Fowl, like ducks. Collective, if anyone that follows along with the Punisher Waterfowl, a lot of the episodes, little clips and snips get posted in there, and you can find me tagged in a lot of the content there as well.
Yeah, great podcast. Enjoy what you guys talk about over there all the time.
Just a hockey sock mismatch of shenanigans. Yeah, but I love it. Wouldn't give it up for anything.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Phil, I appreciate your time. Have a good night, sir.
Appreciate the invite, sir. It means a lot.
Huge thanks again to Phil for taking time out of his day to join me on the show. And thank you all for tuning into this episode. I really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Migration Waterfowl. We also have a Facebook group for the podcast. Please join us there as well. And if you could, please do me a favor and subscribe to the YouTube channel while you are there. Lots of great content coming that way throughout the rest of the year. You can find links to our merchandise store in the show notes below or on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Check out our shirts, hoodies, thermoses, coffee, and more over there. And now, through the end of May, 10% of everything we sell will go to Ducks Unlimited. Thank you to everyone who has been purchasing merchandise and supporting the show. If you like what you've heard here, please take a moment and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Send me a message or email after you leave the review, and I will mail you a podcast decal. And get out there and enjoy the outdoors, but make sure you seek out a relationship with the one who created everything. Jeremiah chapter 33, verses 2 and 3 says, "This is what the Lord says, He who made the earth, the Lord who formed it and established it. The Lord is His name. Call to me, and I will answer you and tell you great and unsearchable things you do not know." And remember, the migration is coming. Be ready when it arrives. Tune in next week to hear another great guest on the Migration Waterfowl Podcast.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.